Hello and welcome to this episode of the Mushing Podcast. Today I'm joined by 2026 Junior Iditarod Champion Stanley Robinson from Robinson Racing Kennel up in Nenana, Alaska. I'm sure you know the name Robinson. His sister is the only four-time winner of the Junior Iditarod. And we're going to get into this later into the episode, but just maybe Stanley can challenge his sister for that record. Let's get into it.
Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to the sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with the history of the sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on mushing.com.
Stanley, welcome to the Mushing Podcast. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you. I know you were on the podcast a year or two ago. I had both you and your sister on separately, and we had a great conversation back then, but a lot has changed in your world. Yeah. Just last week, at the time of re-recording this, you won the Junior Iditarod, the 2026 Junior Iditarod, and also Rookie of the Year, if I'm not mistaken. So first off, congrats to that. What did that like coming under the finish line for the first time?
Oh, it felt great. Yeah, it was amazing. My dogs did great. I was super proud of them. And yeah, it was a thrill for sure.
So I know this is your first Iditarod, but definitely not the first time that you have been on the runners in a race. You've ran the Willow Junior 100 a couple of times. I think you came in second place on that race this year. And I think you had ran that race before when we spoke. Can you give us an idea of your season so far? I know it's almost ending here. Iditarod's getting ready to start. What has been the racing season like for you?
It's been really good so far. I was planning on racing a race earlier on in my season, a 100-mile race, but that ended up falling through just because of snow conditions. And then I ran the Willow Junior 100, and then just last week, the Junior Iditarod.
So the Junior Iditarod, my daughter, Nicole, ran that race twice. And each time she ran it, they had to run it from a different location. One time was sort of the traditional route, and then the other time was sort of up near your neck of the woods on the Denali Highway.
Yeah.
What was the route this year?
It was the regular route. It starts in Kinnick, and it goes through out to like Yetna Station and stuff and comes back to Kinnick. But that's the original route.
And that's a 150-mile race, and it was pretty dang cold last weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had some 25 below, 30 below. It was up and down a lot. But yeah, I got pretty cold with some wind chill.
So on that 150-mile run, it's a little bit different than an adult race because you guys have such a long layover there at Yetna Station. If I remember correctly, it's 10 hours. And you got there pretty early, but that also means you're leaving in the middle of the night, right?
Correct. Yeah, I left at like 2:39.
So as a junior musher, how do you prep for that? Do you do that in training? Tell our listeners how you can prepare to come in, you know, at a real fresh pace and then get up as a youngster and literally leave when everybody your age is probably asleep.
Yeah, I don't really train for it, really. I mean, I go to bed later. I have a later schedule. But you're basically just pretty much pulling all nighter, I guess. But I have like 5-hour energy and stuff, and that sometimes helps out. But at the end, you do have like a caffeine crash.
Oh yeah, yep. So I know we've set the stage here for Junior Iditarod, but for folks that may not know who you and your family are, you guys go way back. in dog mushing. Yeah. I know your sister ran Junior Iditarod and won it many times. Your dad is a racer. You guys are a mushing family through and through. I know you live in Nenana, which is the start of the 1925 Serum Run. So there's a lot of mushing history in your area, but tell us how you guys got started in mushing as a family.
Well, my dad lived in Michigan and he always wanted to run the Iditarod. And then, he moved up and handled for a musher and then ended up running the Iditarod in 2001 and then, decided to have a family. And, then, like 5 or 6 years ago, we started mushing again. And, yeah, me and my sister have been, mushing ever since.
So what was your first time ever on the runners? How old were you?
I think about four.
Four. Yeah. And I remember when we spoke last time, we were talking about your trap line. Do you still do that? And if you do, tell us what that means.
Yeah, I do. I do still trap. And with mushing dogs, I run about, last year I did about 40 miles, trap line. This year I did about 20. But it's really fun to trap with the dogs and do that. So, yeah.
So for somebody that's listening in New York City, they probably have no idea what we're talking about. Set the scene for us. What does that mean? What does a day look like if you're going out and setting traps or bringing the traps back in? Give us an idea of what that is.
Yeah, so basically we'll set the traps out early in the season, and then they'll pretty much just be there all the season. And every time we run dogs, we will check the traps just as we're going by. And they're pretty easy to maintain.
And what are you trapping for?
Mainly pine marten and lynx.
Pine marten and lynx. And are you guys processing that and selling the fur and all that?
Yeah.
What does that look like? Are you guys selling it to fur traders? Do you guys sell it yourself? Do you guys... I don't know much about trapping. So do you guys like skin the lynx and process it and all that? What does that equal?
Right. So we'll bring it back and then we'll skin it and then we dry it and then we send it into the tannery and then we'll basically we'll keep it for ourselves. Maybe we'll make it into a ruff or something or a hat. And then the rest of it we'll like, we'll sell it to a fur buyer and they'll sell it to like a global market.
So on the lynx, are you typically making hats and gloves and that sort of thing?
No, not the lynx as much, more the pine marten.
And what are you doing? What is the lynx good for?
The lynx, a lot of people make, we don't make a ton of fur stuff. But a lot of people make like earmuffs with it, hats. It'll be lined in some things like gloves. The pine marten is more universal, but they're a good wall hang too.
Okay. And as a musher, I know very well that there are certain furs that are much better at keeping us warm, particularly with ruffs and hats and things like that.
Correct.
For example, the seal hats are very good. The wolverine ruffs and wolf hats and beaver and marten and, or excuse me, otter and those type of things. Those work very well, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're a trapper, you're a dog musher, you're a racer, you're also homeschooled. I'm sure that allows you guys to do what you need to do as a mushing family. How does school I don't want to say get in the way, but you know what I mean? How are you getting your studies done and still doing all this other stuff as well?
Well, we do, like right now, we'll do a lot of catch up in the spring. But we kind of just do, you know, as much as we can throughout the year. And then, yeah, it's a lot of catch up at the end of the year for sure. We'll do a little bit coming into the summer.
Do you enjoy that?
Yeah. I mean, it works out good. It works out good for our schedule. You know, we get to run dogs all winter and trap and do all that stuff every day. So it works out good.
Okay. So let's jump back into dog racing. I would love to hear a story from maybe the Junior Iditarod or the Willow Junior 100. Tell us about one time on the trail on one of those races and maybe set the scene there.
Yeah, no, it went really well for the Junior Iditarod. I did end up taking a wrong trail, which was pretty fun. So that's kind of the story. I took a wrong trail, and then I had to get my dogs on the best packed trail so I could set my ice hooks down. And then I had to go up to my dogs, and then I had to turn the whole team around to get back on the trail, the right trail.
And was that on a river? Was that one of the river trails, or is that leading out to one of the rivers there?
Yeah, so it was about 20 miles out from leaving the checkpoint after doing my 10-hour break. And it was a spot where it was glare ice, and there was a more chewed down trail, and that was the trail that the dogs wanted to follow, but it wasn't the right way to go. And that's just the trail that they took because it looked better and I didn't have a lot of time to react. And then by the time I did react, they were already going down that trail and I couldn't stop.
Yeah. And I've been on that trail many times there on the Yentna and the Sioux River. I'm pretty much thinking where that trail is. And for folks listening, both the Sioux and the Yentna are pretty large rivers. I think the Sioux is probably... Yeah. I don't know, maybe a half a mile or so across. And then it's got all these twists and turns and offshoots and all of that. Up in Nenana, you have a river system as well, as we talked about with the Serum Run that goes on the Nenana River to the Tanana to the Yukon and on. So you're pretty familiar with running on river trails, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, we do a lot of river running.
Do you prefer the twists and turns of like a wooded trail or just sort of the openness of one of those river trails?
That's tough. The open rivers, I would say, do get a little boring after a long time because it's kind of just like painting the same picture. But I do kind of prefer the tighter trails for sure.
Definitely more driving, more action, if you will, going through the woods there. Let's talk about your setup on the Junior Iditarod. What is the number of dogs that you guys are allowed to run?
So you can start with anywhere from 7 dogs to 10 dogs.
Okay.
I think everybody in the race this year started with 10. I finished with 9 dogs.
So you dropped one. And is it very similar to the Willow Junior 100?
Yes. Same thing.
Same thing. And the Willow Junior 100 actually runs on our trail system. You guys run right past our house. I remember last year I was out there taking pictures of you guys and had some drone footage. I'm going to see if I have some of that I can pop on this episode for sure. But there is some interesting trails right around here, aren't there?
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I remember, go ahead.
My first year, I did take a wrong trail too on that run.
And you guys aren't going up the mountain anymore, or are you? Up towards Hatcher Pass? You guys are staying lower?
No, we've been staying lower. Yeah.
I remember in years past when my daughter ran that race, you guys were going way up on the Herning Trail. That's when Christine Stitt was still operating the race. I know she passed away recently and she was the honorary musher, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was, I remember that trail pretty thorough.
Oh yeah. It is a fun one. I've gone up and down that trail so many times and man, you fly down that side of that hill. I don't know how fast you're going, but it feels like you're on that event during the Olympics. What is it called? The luge or the bobsled or whatever?
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your dogs. I know that you guys have right around 35 dogs. You were talking about a race team is about 10 dogs. For folks that may not know how you pick and choose, what is your guys' process? And in particular, when you guys are racing together, I know you and your sister have raced together in the same race. I know you've done training runs with your sister and your dad. Who gets first dibs at racing? I know you're sort of doing your own thing now, at least entering races on your own, not with other people, right?
Yeah. So we'd split it up. We'd call it an A and a B team. The A team would be the veteran team. And that'd be like our main race team to go do really well in a race. And then the other team would be our B team. And our B team would be like our up-and-coming dogs, our yearlings, the dogs to train up and be the up-and-coming race dogs. And that's the dog team that I'd run. It'd be a good learning experience for me to learn how to run dogs and for how to teach my dogs how to run the race. And then Emily would run the more experienced dogs. in a race.
So I know last year, after you guys finished up your race season, you kind of went under the radar and did something that was very unexpected, at least in the mushing community. You guys jumped on your sleds and in your snow machines, and you took off to Nome. Can you tell us a bit about that trip?
Yeah, that was a really good trip. We left from our house, and then we went down to right through our trail system onto the river system, and then we went all the way to Nome. We followed the Iditarod. Yeah.
What an epic journey. And I know there was a lot, if I remember correctly, there was a lot of posting on Facebook and Instagram all over the place. But I know your sister ran a lot of that race, but tell us about your time, if you had, on the trail there and what the experience like was for you.
Yeah, so we took a 112 dog team, and then we took a snow machine. So then it was my sister, and then my dad. And we were all swapping through the dogs and driving the snow machine. So that was really fun. And we kind of just all swapped around all the way to Nome.
So you guys did it, what, like every day you would switch mushers?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, multiple times a day. Sometimes one of us would run for a full or 2 days straight or something, and then we'd swap out. Just depend.
So tell us about that terrain. Obviously, that was new for you. You had not been on probably 80 or 90% of that trail. What was that country like?
A lot of it was just running the Yukon. So it was a lot of river miles, and that's where it kind of gets boring. It's kind of just the same picture like the whole way. But then we hit Caltag, and then we got over to Unalakleet, and that's more hills. And then we hit the coast, and the coast was really fun. And then leaving White Mountain was a lot of rolling hills, and it got exciting there, and then on into Nome.
So it must have been good to have that snow machine support, either you and your dad or whoever was on the machine. But did you guys face any harrowing conditions out there, like major winds or wind chill or anything like that?
No, not really too many challenges. There was one spot where it was like 2 to 3 miles long. It was a sandbar, and it was just complete sand. There was no snow, and our machine was overheating, and we were worried about, you know, the dogs don't really know where to go because there wasn't very many trail markers, but the dogs did great. They got through there, but we kind of fell behind with the snow machine because it kept overheating.
Right. Yeah, they can do that for sure, especially when you're running in those kind of conditions. How long did that trip take you guys?
We did it in like 12 or 13 days.
Okay.
Like 2 weeks.
So close to 2 weeks, and I'm sure that there were still people. Yeah, for sure, there were still people out on Iditarod when you guys were running, right?
Yeah, we finished right with like Bailey Vitilio. We finished, well, technically it would have been like fifth place.
Oh, okay, and it was smack dab.
If we were running.
Yeah, smack dab in the middle of all that Iditarod hoopla. Did you guys get a chance to run underneath the New World Arch?
Yeah, we did. We did pretty much exactly what the, Iditarod mushers did. So we simulated the serum run.
Oh yeah, for sure. So with this racing, Stanley, we've talked about, you've pretty much been doing this since you were 4 years old. Willow Jr. 100, Junior Iditarod now as a champion, doing this trip with your family out from Nenana to Nome. What's next for you? I know you have a few more years as a junior, but are you thinking about doing Iditarod? What's the plan?
That's definitely a big thought. I'm definitely going to run most of my junior years yet. I have like 3 more years of junior mushing. And then, yeah, Iditarod, we're going to have to think about for sure.
Okay. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I know that your sister... what does she win? 4 times the junior Iditarod?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any competitiveness in your household? Are you gonna tie that record when you're done?
I mean, we're gonna try.
I remember being at the junior Iditarod finish last year, and it was up on the Copper Basin Trail. And I remember her winning that award, and man, that was pretty cool. It'd be cool for you to be able to do that too. I think I'm positive that there has never been a record like that of having having a brother and sister with that kind of record, right?
I'm not sure, but I think so.
All right. Well, we're going to be rooting for you for sure. And good luck on that. Before I ask the same questions I asked to all of my mushers, I would love to hear a story about one of your dogs. It can be a lead dog. It doesn't even have to be a race dog. It could just be a dog in your kennel. Can you tell us about this dog, how old they are, what they look like, and maybe a quirk or two about them?
Yeah, Vicky's one of my leaders, and she does really good. She's pretty silly most of the time. She'll actually sit and shake your hand. But she's a really good dog. She's 7 years old. She's my main leader, and she just does really great.
So Vicky, lead dog, is she a big dog, little dog? What's she look like?
She's actually a pretty small dog. Yeah.
Like 35 pounds ish?
Yeah, around there.
And are your dogs more husky or more houndy?
They're a mix. We're kind of on the houndish side of things, but they're very in the middle.
And what does that mean for folks that aren't sure? Because a lot of people that listen, they think every dog looks like, you know, Balto or Togo, the Siberian looking dogs. What do your dogs look like?
A lot of Alaskan Huskies are a lot more shorter haired, and a lot of our dogs are more look like a hound, and they're more floppy eared and just kind of bigger hounds. And yeah, they're definitely different than what a lot of people expect.
And do you guys have particular lines that you have worked with? I'm sure over the years you guys are developing your own, but do you have kennels or people that you go to when you're looking to add dogs?
Yeah, we have some Jeff King stuff and a little bit of Pete Kaiser, and that's kind of just what our main stuff is right now.
Okay, all right. And obviously you guys are doing some breeding on your own?
Yeah, most of our dogs are ours.
And since you guys do such different things, I mean, you guys are doing this as still part of your livelihood in terms of going out on the trap line and all that. These are not just race dogs. These are more traditional mushing dogs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
For sure.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't doing that anymore. It's like with whatever activities we're in, right? Whether it be, mountain biking or skiing or any other thing, we have specialized gear and things just for our fun activities, but you guys are truly allowing these guys to quote unquote work for a living.
Yeah.
Very cool. Sure. All right, Stanley, I'm going to ask you the questions I ask all of our guests. I let you know what they were before we started recording, so hopefully you've thought about them a little bit. The first one is, what is your favorite song or artist? What are you listening to, whether out on the trail or jamming in the with your iPhone or whatever you have? What are you listening to?
Oh man, I don't listen to a lot of music when I'm like in a race or training. But when I do, I listen to a lot of like 80s rock stuff and a lot of country. I don't particularly have a favorite artist. I like a vast majority of artists.
Okay. Well, I'm going to pick on you a little bit. 80s rock. That was my era growing up. If you had to choose one band, who would you be listening to if it was 80s rock?
Oh man, probably like Bon Jovi.
Okay. All right. Bon Jovi. And I guess there's a couple of good mushing songs there, like Living on a Prayer or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I love it. Okay. The next one is, what is one piece of gear you always have with you other than your phone? And this could be on a training run or a race or whatever. What are you always carrying around with you?
My axe.
Your axe. And always, is it just a typical axe, or is it have a story with it?
No, it's just any standard axe, really. But I've always had an axe, whether it's mushing dogs or going out on a snow machine ride. An axe is really important just because you can cut trees out of the way, and you can cut lines with it, and it's just a super important piece of gear.
For sure. And it's mandatory gear on just about every race. That is one of the first things that they're checking on when you're pulling into a checkpoint or the finish. Okay. Next one is a two-parter. It is, what is your favorite trail meal or snack out on the runs there? And then secondly, when you guys are traveling to races and you're pulling into the gas station or whatever, what are you picking up?
On the trail, I eat like a variety of things. I don't, on a race, I don't have a lot of snacks with me. In training, sometimes I do. I like dried mangoes. They don't freeze up as bad, and they'll thaw really easy. I like a lot of dried fruit. And then at a gas station, probably like anything from like Haribo or anything, you know, just gummy bears and stuff. And then to drink, I probably just like a root beer or Sprite, I guess.
Okay, root beer, Sprite, and gummy bears. And you alluded back on the talk we were having about Junior Iditarod with 5-hour energy and the caffeine crash. I'm a 5-hour energy guy. If I were to say what is my favorite trail meal or snack, I'm probably saying the same thing you did. I'm saying gummy bears, beef jerky, and 5-hour energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff works, doesn't it?
No, the crash is real, though.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, especially if you're having to get up and run at, like you said, 2:30 in the morning. You got, I don't know, 70 miles to go or whatever. You pop a couple of those 5-hour energies and literally 5 hours later, you're needing another one, aren't you?
Yeah,
for sure. Okay. Stanley, where can folks follow you guys? I know that you have a kennel page, but I forgot to ask. So let me back up just a second. Cause I've here on my notes. Can you tell us briefly about your guys's Borealis Adventure Lodge? Before you tell us where you can get followed, what is the deal with that? I've seen it all over the internet.
Yeah, so we just got a lodge last fall, and we just turned it into an Airbnb, and we've been renting it out, and it's been doing pretty good.
And you guys are not only the host, but you guys are also offering sledding rides and all sorts of stuff, right?
Yeah, we do like 6-mile dog sled rides.
Okay. And the people that are booking that, are they typically out of town or tourists, or are they Alaskans, or who?
A lot of people that are out of town.
Okay. Yeah. And they've probably never seen anything like that. What do they say to you guys when they, you know, come in and kick back for a while? What are some of the comments?
Oh, they love it. They're super stoked. Everybody that we've had there so far.
All right.
And the dog thing is just like the cherry on the top for them.
For sure. I mean, that's a bucket list experience for some of those guys. They're traveling all the way up here and they want that Alaskan experience. And it sounds like you guys are giving that for sure. So I'm going to put links for that. But also, where are you guys most active on social? Is it Instagram? Is it Facebook? Do you guys have a website? What?
Mainly Facebook. Yeah. Everything. We link everything, and everything's pretty much on Facebook.
And it's Robinson Racing Kennel, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. I'll make sure all those links are there. Stanley, hang on just a second as we close here. On behalf of my guest today, Stanley Robinson, the 2026 Junior Iditarod Champion, it's been a pleasure speaking to you again. Good luck to you for the rest of the year, and I hope to see you on the trail soon.
Thank you.
All right. On behalf of that, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports.
Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.